Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Look, you want to push the button? You do it yourself.
If it's not real, then what are you doing here, Jack? Why did you come back? Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
It's never been easy!
It's a leap of faith, Jack.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and what am I smuggling in statues? I'm smuggling really expensive D20 dice, like blood diamond dice.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I am smuggling California legal drugs into a place where it is not legal to have them. You know the kind I mean, the green leafy stuff.
And I'm Neil Miller, and inside my Virgin Mary statues, I'm putting my gems, they are uncut, and they are going into the Virgin Mary. It's either uncut gems or nuclear warheads, like Tia Carrere in True Lies.
Yes.
Where they just destroy so many priceless things.
True Lies, one of those movies I really remember liking and am now sort of terrified to return to because of the time it was made and the races that are involved and Elijah Dushku's horrible story about sexual harassment. So,
yeah, as someone who recently rewatched it because his HBO Go is about, or his HBO Now is about to expire, you're right to be nervous.
Okay, good. Good to know. I have the memories of True Lies. We are here to talk about season 2, episode 10 of Lost. It's the 23rd Psalm. It's a Mr. Echo episode. If this is your first time joining us, interesting time to jump in, but maybe you're very monster-centric. I can completely understand that. We split the podcast into two parts. The first part we call The Calm. That will have no discussion about episodes past season 2, episode 10. And then we have a section called The Storm that involves spoilers, including the other, or acknowledgement of the other six seasons of Lost. Minor spoiler for this week's episode. At some point, we're going to rank the seasons of Lost in the Calm section. So we will acknowledge there is more Lost coming. I guess I shouldn't have drawn the spoiler line that hard, but we won't have any details outside of the Storm. The Storm is where you go for spoilers. That's why you could support us at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you could get extra content. This week we're going to talk about The Witcher. Last week we talked about Picard. We're getting back into television season after, you know, spending some time Star Warsing and whatnot over the holidays. So if you are missing television coverage that isn't Lost, you could find that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. Bonus stuff starts at the low, low price of $1. And then you also make the show possible. It's super fun for all involved. But you don't have to toss a coin to your podcast to get any special content or to necessarily... Well, you do have to get special content, but you don't have to toss a coin to your podcast in order to talk to us. You could leave us reviews. You could send us emails. And then we read some on the show like Joanna's about to do right now.
Do you guys have... Are you drinking anything right now, Neil? Are you drinking something?
Water.
Water? Dave?
I have water.
Water?
Yes.
Do you think your water could use a little salt in it? Oh, ooh. Cool. Because you got some salty reviews and emails. Hi.
I mean, to answer your question, no.
Though,
no salt.
Salt in water is supposed to be good for you. But anyway.
Oh, okay.
Something about ions. I don't know.
It's anyway. Like Gatorade, yeah.
Okay, so first of all, if you want to email us, you can email us, host@stormpodcast.com. You want to find out what's going on with our schedule and everything else, you can visit our website, stormpodcast.com. And you can follow us on Twitter, @stormpodcast. So those are all good places to get a hold of us. We do love it when you write reviews for us. Usually, we like to read 5-star reviews, because who doesn't like to hear nice things said about themselves? But today, we'll be reading a 3-star review from Vega 007 titled Pretty Good Except for Joanna. But Joanna is spelled with an H, so Johanna, but that's okay. Or Johanna, I guess.
Johanna.
So Vega 007 writes, I enjoyed it and the guys are pretty good, but Johanna is deplorable. She is incredibly misinformed and foolish and a #MeToo incompetent idiot that says some of the dumbest things. Johanna, understand this. Being in the military qualifies you to use a gun, Saeed. Kate is a civilian. There's no way you could equate those two unless you are an idiot. So that is a review that we got.
It's interesting that he looped back to Lost there. I'm sorry. I'm assuming it's a he because it is. Yeah, that's, you know what, for a second I was about to be like, fuck the entirety of that, but there's a little bit of loss, so it's three stars. I could see sort of the angle
so
where that's coming
93%
from.
Of that.
I'm just confused.
Yeah, exactly.
Is the right using deplorables? Like, I thought that was a left thing. That was like a, that's a
yeah,
left.
Isn't it supposed to be like a snowflake or like a
it's a
libtard?
Hillary Clinton basket of deplorables. Like,
I can't
maybe
remember.
They're trying to reclaim the word.
I guess
I have
back.
So. I have a funny story about something like this. I recently received a scathing, similarly angled email via the Film School Rejects email. And I actually got super curious and like emailed the guy back and was like, because he ended his email with, do you think Clint Eastwood is a Nazi? And I was like, I have so many questions about that one question. Like, because the rest of his email was not about, it was about the Amazon show Hunters. So it was very out of left field. I emailed him back. He never emailed me. He accused me of being not wanting the feedback, but he didn't want to answer for himself. It's very weird. I don't know.
So first of all, don't come at our co-hosts so aggressively, no matter how dumb the things we might say sound to you. Second of all, I don't really remember what he's referencing in terms of who gets to use guns, but they're in an island full of mystery, so there aren't any licenses
it
anyway.
It feels like a season one thing. Like, I feel like that's like a... Jack was like, Kate can't have a gun, but gave one to Saeed or something like that. And I was like, mm-hmm.
Oh, you were like, oh, yeah, okay. Maybe. That makes sense. Well, he's catching up.
I don't recall, but that seems to be something that I could have done. My major takeaway is I don't consider myself a #MeToo incompetent. I consider myself a #MeToo competent. So, thank you very much. I don't know what that
competent
means.
At the very least.
Know what that means. Anyway, we also got an email. It's not as salty. This is from Rosemary Cox. I'm gonna read the end of Rosemary's email just so that you guys know that she does like the show, because you might think she doesn't if you anyway. She says, because she's catching up as well. She's in season one, sort of catching up with our episodes, but she's a big Lost fan. And she said, I'm sure I'll end up emailing as the series goes along, and I hope y'all don't mind. Thanks for the podcast. I'm loving it. And then she signed it Rosemary, not Rosemary. So don't worry. Rosemary, I will not mispronounce your name. Okay. So starting back at the beginning, Rosemary says, she starts with her origin story, which is something that people, you know, were sending us at the beginning of the podcast. So thank you for that. She said, Lost was beginning their third season and I was a junior in college. I was hanging out with a friend and maybe we had smoked a tiny bit of pot. I noticed he had season one of Lost on DVD. I pointed to it and said, oh, wow, I've been wanting to watch that. Can we watch some? His face immediately turned sort of solemn and he didn't look at me. I waited. He sighed, slowly turned to me and said, I don't really want to be responsible for that. I gave him the, what you talking about, Willis, look. He finally said, me showing you your first episode of Lost is like giving someone their first hit of heroin. I laughed as he stared at me completely straight-faced. He was not joking, like, at all. After some prodding and ill-made promises from me not to be crazy, he eventually acquiesced to one episode only. He was so right. He let me borrow the box set and I then started renting the episodes from Blockbuster, back when you could rent just one disc at a time. It was my first experience with binging, and I was driving to Blockbuster multiple times per day because I kept thinking I could stop, and I couldn't. Oh, yes. This
is a wow.
familiar feeling. I have never seen a show since that made me feel the same way. It was a once-in-a-lifetime to me. Cut to a few years later, Lost is streaming on Netflix, and I convinced my roommate, Gina, to dive in. The only thing better than watching Lost is introducing someone else to it. Joanna mentions watching the person to make sure they're watching it right, and that's exactly what I was doing. I cannot describe the pure joy that is watching someone else watch Lost. She asked me so many questions I couldn't answer because it opens up a whole wormhole of other questions, and I just had to let her experience all the wonder and frustration and mystery that I did. In the end, she didn't love it like I did, but it was still mad fun, and I want to do it again. So, and then she's just going to check in on some things that we said over time. I will skip this. The first one is about Boone and Locke and the gooping. I know you guys remember the great goopening of mm-hmm. of season one.
It was gooptastic.
I guess at the time we had a question about whether or not Boone was fully hallucinating or if the smoke monster was helping. And she says the sound effect. She says, if you watch again, you'll notice the monster in Boone's hallucination makes more dinosaur roar sounds. There is no, as you put it, clickety-clacking at all. I just thought it was an interesting little thing they did. So that, to her, sort of underlines that she thinks it's definitely a hallucination. and she said she thought we were a little too hard on Boone. But the other character, and this is relevant to this week's episode, another character you guys are hard on that I've always loved, even after multiple rewatches, is Charlie. Maybe it speaks to my own personality, but I totally get his bitterness at not being involved in stuff. That's the same reason I like Boone and Dr. Arts as well. I think Charlie and Arts' quips about the A-team and popularity and stuff is so funny, and unlike Joanne, I was absolutely not happy when Arts blew up. I thought we were all three pretty happy when Arts blew up. No? Okay.
I mean, I can't say that I was happy when I first saw it, like way back in the day, but revisiting it, it is a moment of joy.
She goes on to say, I'm just saying maybe we could point out a few good things about Charlie and Arts. Credit where credit is due. They're funny. Also, Charlie is off of heroin. Of course, he's going to be a little short temper. And then she talks about her cousin's personal relationship to getting clean, which is a very long process, of course. Then she says, give Charlie a break. Rewatching changes your opinion on certain characters. And I remember Charlie being one of my favorites. I think I like those grumpy, funny types, especially when they're English. And while he's not up there on my list anymore, he still holds a special place in my heart. And I think that's true. You know, like, I've been thinking a lot. We've been continually thinking a lot. We are pretty hard on Charlie. And I did love Charlie when I first watched the show. And that is like one of the most interesting, that and Shannon are the two most interesting like character gaps for me in terms of like my changed opinion. Do you guys have any other characters that you feel like your opinion is an extreme change watching it like 2019, 2020 versus back in the day?
An extreme change. No, but
I don't feel like there's...
There was crazy whiplash with Charlie. Like, the Charlie rewatch thing snuck up on me with this rewatch with you guys, because it's been so long since my last rewatch. Once you rewatch, like, the whole series, the way the characters crystallize in your head is the way you sort of view them having the whole series in your head. So I guess I'm looking forward to... certain side characters revealing the fact they're side characters in the calm, and then we get to retroactively look back at how they were used, which I think we got to do with Boone and Shannon. So it'll be interesting to see who's next on that reevaluation.
Well, someone in our Patreon Slack was like, I was sort of hoping you guys would give Ana Lucia the same treatment you gave Shannon, but not really. And I was like, it's tougher with Ana Lucia, but anyway, Neil, thoughts?
I actually think I've been thinking about the Charlie thing, and it's funny because I still like Charlie as a character.
Yeah.
Like, Dom Monaghan is an eminently likable actor and gives as Rosemary pointed out, a funny, at times he's one of the only, you know, release valves of tension on this show, he and Hurley. I just think that, you know, watching it now and understand and feeling like I understand more about screenwriting and how to structure seasons of television, it's less about being hard on Charlie, I feel, and more about being hard on the way the show used Charlie. Like, the way the show just continues, as we see in this episode, to go back to Charlie's addiction. Whereas, you could, there's probably another universe in which Charlie is a different, slightly different fleshed out character and has other things, but it's really more about the way the show uses him that is this, what we've been hard on.
Yeah, this Charlie episode works really well for me, and I think it's because we've got the character of Mr. Echo, like, being so tough on him. I think when we see someone call Charlie out on his shit, it works better for me because then Charlie's in an underdog position and I am, like, rooting for him. And I even if parts of this episode feel like a retread for Charlie, I still feel like that final moment where he's like, where you see the stash of, you know, you're like rooting for him in various ways. Like, you're kind of like, okay, Mr. Echo gives him a statue, you know, after they leave the plane, and you're like, toss it on the fire, Charlie, you can do it. And he doesn't. And you're like, okay, okay, bud, you need your security blanket. Okay. And then you see you got that he's got a little trove going, and you're like, oh, bud, no. So yeah, I think this is a good Charlie episode, even though he's like incredibly frustrating in his like continual lies and all the sort of stuff that he does in this episode. Like, it's a good use of him as a companion for this, Echo side quest sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that, especially rewatching it this time, I want Charlie to be telling Claire the truth there when he's like, you know, this is in the past. But, you know, the show makes a different decision. So.
Do we have more reviews and emails, or are we into episode
That's
proper?
It. We did it.
Excellent.
We did it.
All right.
Then let's continue talking about the 23rd Psalm. Neil, what happened this week on the island?
Yes, let's break it down. This episode was directed by Matt Earl Beasley, first timer, at least so far in our rewatch. It was written by Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof. You know them. It aired on January 11th, 2006. You'll notice that it was, this was the first episode back after a, what is it, about a month and a half break there at the winter. That's a lost. They used to do that in the winter months. They would take the break. It takes place on day 50 on the island. We've made it to day 50. In flashbacks, we learn the origin story of Mr. Echo, which includes killing a man to save his brother, getting an earring, and getting a reputation for not having a soul. We learn about his relationship with Yemi and how Yemi ended up on that plane in a jungle of mystery. On the island, Claire tries to get Mr. Echo to talk to Charlie about his statue collection, which once again brings Charlie's drug habit into the fore. After seeing the statue, Mr. Echo becomes very intense and drags Charlie into the jungle for a hike. On their way to the mystery plane, Mr. Echo wins a staring contest with the smoke monster. Elsewhere, in the hatch, or around the hatch, I guess, Locke teaches Michael to shoot, and Michael later continues his aim chat with Digital Walt. At one point, Jack also shows up to remind him that we haven't forgotten about Walt. On the beach, Sawyer gets a flirty haircut from Kate and realizes that people like him now. And the whole episode ends with Mr. Echo's goodbye, the 23rd Psalm, over a montage of happy survivors settling in. Also, Claire kicks Charlie out, which isn't such a bad move, as we find out that he has a huge stash of heroin in the jungle. Fun fact, when Echo is having his little staring contest with the smoke monster, if you freeze frame it, you can see faces from his past sort of in the smoke, which is a good little jungle of mystery detail there. This week's opening question. This episode is one that had three deleted scenes, and I'm curious as to which of any of these you would have liked to have seen in the episode. I'm going to describe them for you.
Okay.
There's one in which Kate and Jack have a, quote, awkward conversation about Sawyer. I believe it involves Kate getting the scissors from Jack. There's one in which Claire sees Saeed and asks him about the Virgin Mary statues, because he was there when Charlie picked those up. And then there's one in which Michael and Locke discuss whether or not the computer is connected to the other stations.
Do I, like, only get to pick one? Or I can have any of them.
Let's have rules.
Obviously, Michael and Locke talk about
that. No, because that's not true. It's connected to an electro sun. I'm going to take the one where Kate and Jack have awkward conversations about Sawyer.
Haven't they already had this conversation? Like,
how many conversations?
So many times.
Yeah, more Evangeline Lilly.
I like Evangeline Lilly, but not like Jack being weird. Anyway,
I really like the fact that they cut the one with Claire and Saeed, because I don't know, there's just something like it, like Claire coming up and sort of like getting aggressive with the questions with Saeed as he's like mourning Shannon.
Ooh.
Feels like a tough one.
Yeah, and this is a good Claire up. Like, we like seeing Claire like really stand up for herself against Charlie in a way that I feel like she could have done, you know, previous to now. And I think Claire and Charlie are cute. We'll never forget about the peanut butter. But you know, he's lying to her. He's being irresponsible. And I'm very glad for her that she's like, listen, no, I guess what's hard? Being a single mom on a desert island. Guess what? I don't need to mom you at all whatsoever. So I think, so I like that she kind of seems to make, you know, like Mr. Echo gives her some information, but the progression we see from Claire being like, that's it, I'm done. Without that Saeed scene just becomes her own internal journey, like that she has while he's gone. And I like that for her. You know what I mean? It's just like Claire thought about it, decided she was very mad and made a decision, you know?
Yep. And now Charlie's stuff is on the front lawn.
The reason I would vote for the Michael and Locke computer connected to other stations question, is not because I need the answer to be one thing or another. I just think that that's more like island mystery stuff that's like fun to talk about. It's not because it like proves a point or doesn't, you know?
Fair.
Yeah, it would also be interesting to see Michael sort of try to work out what's actually happening. You know, I feel like he hasn't questioned it yet.
Yeah,
you know, like he seems to just be like,
yeah,
I'm talking to my son. This is cool. Everything's great. Like, he's not at all questioning.
Yeah, yeah.
The same questions we talked about last week is like, is it someone else trying to impersonate Walt? You know, like Michael's not considering any of that at this point.
Well, we like the idea of, I like the idea in this episode that he realizes that people are going to catch on to him. So he sort of preemptively goes to Locke and is like, this is what I'm not going to do. And then we spend the rest of the episode being like, oh, he probably is. That seems like Michael was trying to play Locke there right from the beginning. But the Locke-Michael dance over the guns seems really interesting this episode, and that I think they're both acting at each other. And I like those scenes when I realize I'm in it. I'm like, oh, this is like a simple scene about shooting some ranch and maybe learning some more about Locke's father. But no, it's two people lying at each other, trying to feel each other out, which I like.
A bit. But like Locke, yes. But we can talk about like Locke's intentions later. We like to talk about Locke a lot in the storm, but like, Tim, I like this because I kind of feel like, here's what I kind of feel. Locke both wants to know what's up with Michael's, because Michael's acting very squirrely, right? Even Jack notices that Michael's acting very squirrely. And
Jack's like, "Hey, buddy, we haven't forgot about Walt.
You okay?
Hey, I wanna turn this chair around and
let's have a rap session here.
I wanna right grip the chair. Michael's acting squirrely. Locke kind of wants to know more about why, but he's also like, also you should learn how to shoot. Like, why not? Let's do it. And I also like that it's a nice reflection of like when Locke was trying to teach Walt how to like throw knives or whatever. The first season of Michael's like, are you crazy? Stay away from my son. And now Michael's like, oh, about that. Want to teach me some survival stuff that you learned from your dad? And we also have some nice, like, dramatic irony, right? Where we know when he's like, oh, my dad taught me how to hunt. And like, we know what that means, but Michael doesn't know what that means, right?
Right.
When Locke says that, so.
I'm just saying, if we have a Kate and Jack awkward haircutting thing, maybe we get a Samson reference, maybe we pile more Bible on Bible here in the 23rd Psalm, add more Evangeline Lilly, smiling Evangeline Lilly, give it to me.
Oh,
I would like
so cute in this episode.
Yeah, I would like to spend a moment talking about just like the little moment there with Sawyer. I think that's just such a great, like, there are several moments in this episode where you sort of see how far a character has come. So like Michael going to Locke, even though we know that Michael's intentions are not totally on the level, but like him going to Locke and asking, you know, seeking help about, with weapons is pretty far for Michael to have evolved. And the same thing for Sawyer is like, and I guess it's hard to, other than him just like getting shot. Oh, I guess I'm trying to think of like, why does everyone like Sawyer now? But I would assume it's because Michael came back and told them the story of how heroic he was.
Like what happened
on the raft. So like, you know, to see how far Sawyer has come to being someone that people like, it's great.
I have to say, I mean, like, this is jumping ahead to the end, but I love the, like, everyone's being nice to each other montage on the beach. Mm-hmm. Like, the Kwans bringing fish to Ana Lucia, Hurley helping Libby with her tarp, like, all of that stuff is just, like, you're just like, oh, people are inherently good. A society can function together. At least that was my response.
It's further proof that Lost gets a lot of credit for having a lot of really good, like, hard endings to episodes where it's like a huge cliffhanger, it's a big mystery, and it's boom, there's the logo. But they also are really good at the soft landings on these, some of these episodes where it's just like, it's like a happy montage, you know, or what was it? It wasn't last episode, it was two episodes ago where we had the,
stare down between Jack and Ana Lucia.
No, Rose,
oh,
and
Rose
Bernard.
And Bernard.
So you get, I think that season two, we've seen a couple of them. It's just really good, nice, soft, easy landings for an episode.
I love
except for the whole, Virgin Mary statue collection.
And then, yeah. And then the trumpets, the Giacchino trumpets love to like sour, you know, bad stuff.
Don't forget what you're watching.
I love this episode, not just because I really love Mr. Echo as a character, not just because I think this is a very effective flashback story, but because the twists and turns in the jungle, especially if you're watching for the first time, are really fun. Like, he's like, how does Mr. Echo know what's in the Virgin Mary statues? How does Mr. Echo know about the existence of the plane? How, you know, who is this priest that they found parachuting out to Mr. Echo? Oh, he saved my life. But later we find out what that means. He saved my life by, like, ditching me in the dirt and, like, all this stuff. And, like, are you a priest? And he's like, yes, no, yes, whatever. Like, all that stuff. It's like, oh, this is a great episode of Lost. I really love it.
Yeah, it's an extremely coherent episode between the flashbacks and the island. Like, it feels very of a single piece, which isn't always the case. But yeah, I mean, the strength of the performance by, let's see if I can do
it. All right,
here we go. Practice this. Adewale Akinnoye Agbaje.
I think it's Adewale Akinnoye Agbaje, based on the pronunciation guide you gave me.
It's one of the more difficult notes. But yeah, I mean, it's the strength of his performance is what really sort of brings both sides of this together.
Should we dig into the background of the character of Mr. Echo? Like not this flashback, but like how he came to be on the show.
Sure.
Sure.
So originally, so they wanted to add, you know, an African character to the cast. And originally their idea was to cast the actor Lance Reddick, who was best known at the time for playing Lieutenant Daniels on The Wire, went on to do
Fringe.
Fringe and maybe shows up on Lost eventually. Who's to say? I don't know. But he wasn't available then is the point. And so they cast Adewale Akinnoye Agbaje because of his work on Oz, which I think is also where they got Harold Perrineau. They sort of molded the character to fit him. Because if you think about the physicality of Lance Reddick and the physicality of Adewale, it's like they're, you know, they're two very, like, the immense, like, size and strength and power of this actor, I think it definitely informed the way in which they, you know, sort of reshaped the character. He has said as much in interviews, that they sort of were like, I think they had one thing in mind and then they saw him with like his shirt ripped open and all his muscles rippling and they're like, okay, well, maybe also something else. And then, they changed the character to be, Nigerian, because Adewale Akinnuoyi Agbaje is Nigerian himself, and or from Nigerian descent, and so they like changed it to be like, you know, his actual you know, nationality or whatever. And then it was the actor's idea to put the Mister in front of the Echo. They changed the name because Echo is more Nigerian than the original name they had for the thing. But it was his idea. It was like, it's like Sean Parker taking the off Facebook. He's like, Mr. Echo. And they're like, we don't like it. We think it's silly. And then they like heard it in context once and they're like, that's great.
Oh no, that's perfect.
So good. So yeah. So here's a quote, that he gave. Let's see when he gave this interview. Oh, on the season 2 DVD. He said, I've had some difficulty trying to establish a character with the writers. We were trying to marry what they wanted to do with the show and the feeling that I wanted to see come out in the character. The 23rd Psalm, perhaps, was a bonding point for me as an actor with the writers. So it really was a formulation of a trust between us. Because when I saw that episode, I realized I actually knew where I was coming from. So this feels like he was wary. They were recalibrating an idea that they had to fit the performer. And then they struck gold with this idea in the story. And what I feel like I see in this episode is their excitement and enthusiasm for like a new backstory. I mean, in a way that I didn't feel off the Ana Lucia backstory, a new backstory to play with, a new mysterious spiritual character to have on this island. And I think, you'll see that as other characters come along in future episodes and future seasons. But this is like, I just feel like they're really stoked to have him. They know that they've done a good job here. So
yeah, it feels like with this sort of second Taylee that we get to focus on, it was significantly more relaxed on the part of the writers because you could see them sort of fighting with the Ana Lucia thing is that the problem is they needed to get to a plot point. They needed to get to, you know, trigger nervous Ana Lucia shoots Shannon in the middle of the jungle. Which I guess felt like it informed her backstory in ways that felt really forced. This just feels like they're relaxed and ready to build a character. And, it's great.
The way they tell the story also, there's no time you could get in front of it. While you're watching it moment to moment, which I think Joanna referred to in terms of what Echo knows and where we're going and how it's all going to connect. Rewatching it, it's actually like super elegant to see how they put that together because Ana Lucia's episodes has that, but it's her saying I'm pregnant, which is kind of comes out of left field. This one, by the time you get to like the conclusion, it feels like they had this plan since Boone found the plane. Whether or not that's true, Lost like closes its own loop, maybe for like the first time. Like, we're left with some more questions because, the monster comes into our little search. But I think we have like the totality of the answers of the plane finally. So it was nice to sort of like see them build to that. I don't know. Maybe it's also Ana Lucia's episode, her not flashback part of it had to be that hostage situation trope, which isn't like the best. And this one got to tie into a whole bunch of the island's mysteries and sort of like shed some light on some things without really making them less mysterious. So like we know who is in the plane, but also the brother of a dude who crashed on another plane is here. And isn't it weird that they're like brought to each other and like this weird heroin thing. So the mystery adds to another mystery. And so it's like this weird thing where at the end of the episode, because of the montage, because of the way they dole out the reveal of Echo's story, it feels super satisfying, even though we don't, I don't know, maybe it's because we were isolated in the drama of the others for like 8 weeks or something. And now we finally get to go back to some more questionable things.
Jungle and mystery moments. Yeah, it's... The I will say, I don't think this is a spoiler, there's one more plane moment in one more moment in Lost, at least, but one that sticks out in my mind around that plane that is one of my favorite moments of Lost, which I can talk about in the storm if we want to. But
I think I know. Well, maybe I know. We'll find out.
I know that they did not have this plan when they wrote the plane in season one, but it's one of those we've written ourselves into a corner, let's write ourselves out, that just feels so elegant and planned. You know what I mean? And you're just like, you don't even see the stitches. This puzzle piece fits perfectly into what's going on the island. And it's so satisfying. And I think another reason why it's so satisfying is because it's so emotionally rich, because as we've discovered from Lindelof's subsequent, shows, this idea, you know, we've already explored faith and spirituality already on Lost, but this idea of, like, not just like oblique faith and spirituality, but like tied to religious institutions, faith and spirituality, is something Damon Lindelof is so interested in. So to have just even the visual of, like, you know, tall, powerful Mr. Echo and, like, small, humbled Charlie, like, bonding over their shared, you know, uttering of these words, with the religious iconography of, like, the cross for Mr. Echo and the the Mary statue, like, it all just, like, it all works so perfectly, in everything. And this emotional journey for Echo, where he's like, in the past, you see him, his story is so similar to Charlie's, right? Where it's like a descent that's tied to a brother, that's tied to kind of trying to save a brother, like all this sort of stuff like that. But instead of, like, Charlie forever blaming his brother, which I love that Mr. Echo, like, does not swallow that story for a single second in this episode. Like, you know, you watch Echo try to eventually take better responsibility for his own choices in the matter. And then he's got this spiritual journey of, like, do I have a soul? Could I ever be a priest? Yes, he says at the end, like, yes, I can do this. I have reclaimed that part of myself and, you know, belong here, deserve to be here, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And in true Lost fashion, he is a priest, but he's not everything, you know, he's not everything he seems, you know. It's like, we know this. Charlie doesn't entirely know this yet, but, you know, he wasn't always a priest.
The one thing I don't like about Mr. Echo's backstory, and it's a side effect of how television was popularly produced in this time period, is yellow filters is not changing the lighting. That is just making everything yellow. I get it. I get why people do it. It's bad. There are better ways to shoot things that communicate you're in a different place and, like, maybe a hot place or maybe, like, a foreign place. And, like, it's not like they go to places that are horribly set decorated, or I could tell they're, you know, a field in the middle of Hawaii somewhere. And, like, a lot of the stuff even at the airport is shot sparsely, but shot well enough that I don't think that I'm not in Nigeria or whatever. But it's that yellow filter, man. It just looks gross. It makes the whole thing look gross.
The most 2006
thing in this episode.
2005 thing about this episode.
Oh, is it out of the country?
Did they change
the color?
Did they yellow filter? Have they yellow filtered Saeed stuff when he's in other countries other than Australia and the United States? I feel like maybe they did some of the.
There's a really bad Saeed. Never mind.
I mean, there's.
I was just thinking of a digital effect that they use in the future to try to make you believe you're somewhere else. And I'm like, for Saeed, and I'm like, oh no, that was not good.
All I know is when this episode started, like, previously on Lost, normal footage, yellow footage. And I'm like, ah, fuck. Because I genuinely, TV has gotten good enough with both, like, digital background set recreation and, you know, making, like, something out of nothing with digital techniques, that I forgot that was just something that used to happen all the time on TV. It's like, we're somewhere else, which is a new color. On the other side of the world, the sun shines a different color. I hate it. It's dumb.
Something that's very smart that they did by pairing Mr. Echo with Charlie in this episode is that I think that if it had just been Mr. Echo on his own, or there's a version of this where I brindle at like the African character being like, of course, like involved in drug running, or, oh, of course, the spiritual, like, you know, African man or whatever. But like pairing him with Charlie, who's like the whitest human on the planet, you know what I mean? It's just sort of like, and linking their stories, then you're not like, how tropey is this? You're kind of like, oh, it's a look at this unifying experience so that these two different people are enjoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you feel like they're connected in ways that are really nice and organic, like the whole brotherhood thing. Is Charlie the older or the younger brother between
baby,
him and
baby brother?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, and this is Lost sort of flipping it where it's, Echo is the older brother. So there's sort of a different dynamic there, but they're bonding over the whole experience of having a brother, you know, which is
good, because I'm sure they have bad parents because it's Lost, but we don't have to deal with their bad parents.
Right. Well, and I like that it's not just religious. Like, it's, you know, Charlie's sort of the perfect character to pair with Echo, because there are several things that they match on. So yeah, it's great.
I just want to add a color theory to your shot in yellow complaint, Dave, which is that something that I like, which is that Claire is in Virgin Mary blue in the whole episode.
Ooh.
So like, yeah, they make her look very like, you know, Mother Mary.
So imagine being some sort of designer on this show where you're putting that sort of thought into it, and then the second unit is like, well, we'll just put a yellow filter over everything. that's the sort of thing that frustrates me. Okay, do we need to address is there more Hatch moments? Do we need to talk about the safe or anything? We talked about shooting. I feel like we covered all those characters. Are we good in the calm?
Yeah.
I don't know
how Michael turned off his monitor in time, like, as Jack rounded the corner. That was a nice, like,
yeah, very, very quiet slide.
He thought of that in advance. He had a plan. He had a safety plan. Well, we got to do our section.
Yeah, let's do it.
So Giacchino Corner this week is actually a better one. We've been talking about how Giacchino's been sort of sleeping on the job when it comes to the pun titles. This one ends with they introduce the motif for Mr. Echo, but the track is on the soundtrack is called All's Forgiven Except Charlie.
even Giacchino was like, Charlie.
Yeah, oh, Charlie. Should have burnt that heroin.
Yeah. Or at least not kept so much of
it. You never know where you're going to need a lot of heroin. Also, I guess some of that would be useful to Jack when he was like ripping it up and just dumping it in the sand in front of Claire. I'm like, give the heroin to the doctor.
Right, yeah, can't you use
He just
medical?
Used the last of his tequila making somebody feel better.
You don't know when another trust fund rich boy is going to fall off a cliff.
Exactly.
Have some heroin ready.
Oh, that's right. He did use the heroin for old Boone.
What is our Jungle of Mystery moment, Neil?
This one feels pretty obvious. I couldn't come up with it before we sat down to record, but then when I thought about it a second time, it was staring me right in the face like the smoke monster was staring Mr. Echo in the face. This is actually, fun fact, the first time we see the smoke monster in its entirety. So previously we'd only seen it like come up out of the ground or fly by. This, we get the full smoke monster.
And I think I'm going to jump in here with the official podcast check-in, because Damon Carlton on the podcast that went with this episode had some things to say about the smoke monster that can go in the calm, because this aired before the next episode aired. So here are the quotes we should pay attention to for the monster. Damon says the monster's flashes, quote, seem to be moments from Mr. Echo's life, some of which we might not have even seen yet. Then he goes on to say, I don't know what I would intuit by the fact that the monster was in some ways almost a sort of Ethernet connection to his emotions, but it was in some way downloading his fears and anxieties. And Carlton says, and analyzing them. And then Carlton says, the monster might be reacting to certain aspects of the character that he's facing. So the monster just got gendered. Ooh. Sorry, guys.
Well, the monster just got sentience
as well.
So, or at least it's a computer program that's like scanning your brain.
It is something. It is an Ethernet connection to your emotions, is the official way it's described on the podcast.
Old clickety clack, the Ethernet connection to your
clicking
emotions.
Clicking around in your clackety head.
Cool. The Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award, I believe, is next. This one could go either way because Mr. Echo obviously falls down when he gets kicked from the plane. But Yemi falls down first and in a way that is far more tragic. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to give it to Yemi for getting shot by the Nigerian army.
And then falling out of the sky.
Oh, yeah. And then he, does he fall? Oh,
the whole plane falls out of the sky.
That's right.
Well, then he falls in the plane with the plane with Boone. So Yemi's just
sure
to stop falling down.
And then
he's done the most posthumous falling down on this show so far.
Gold Tooth Guy fell out of the plane.
Oh, yeah.
With a parachute.
That's
so
jumping.
A lot of falling in this episode.
I feel like in his heart, he was jumping out of the plane.
Is jumping out of a plane not also falling out of a plane?
I guess that goes into your heart. What it is in your heart is true as well, but
you're making a very it's all about downward acceleration with the help of gravity toward the ground.
I mean, because of the nature of gravity, that's always happening even when you're not falling. Mm-hmm. So I feel
like
it takes some issue with that. We're constantly resisting the gravity with our meat sack bodies and our stick bones.
Don't like it.
And our Jesus sticks.
That's why we look older, is because the earth is trying to pull us 6 feet under constantly, and we're by the skin of our teeth refusing to. 23rd song.
All right.
So we've got an accent corner this week. It's not like a not. I'm not actually gonna. I should have looked up if any of those, especially since we just watched the movie Cool Runnings, how many of those actors were actually African, but I didn't do that. Actually, there was a conversation raging through our Storm Patreon Slack channels this week about Claire's accent, and specifically the way that Claire, first of all, Claire and Cindy are our two, like, most frequently used Australians, right? Cindy, mm-hmm. the missing flight attendant, and Claire. And, we actually have a number of Australians in our, Patreon Slack for some reason. I don't know why, but thank you all for listening.
I bet Lost was big in Australia.
Yeah, but they've been around since the Thrones times. Anyway, they already made their opinions very clear on peanut butter and the fact that Claire is nuts for saying that Australians don't like peanut butter because they do. They were saying that both Cindy and Claire's accents like don't sound quite right to them. They sound like extra strong, maybe. Like a strong.
Like we told Neil to do like a Appalachian accents or something.
Right. Sure. Exactly. And so they're wondering if those actresses were like, told to play it up, to make sure that audiences really understood they were Australian or something like that. But the specific way in which Claire's accent comes through that sounds really wrong to them is the way that she says Aaron. Because she says, I guess they make a distinction between the name Aaron and Erin in a way that we don't as Americans.
Okay.
There were voice notes used in our Slack. I can't tell you exactly what the difference is, but the Australians seem to agree that Claire says the name Aaron incorrectly. So she says it as if it's a girl's name, which, nothing wrong with that. But there's a whole conversation this week, obviously, about the significance of the name Aaron. And I love that conversation. That's the Echo Claire conversation. It segues a little inorganically into Claire talking about the statues, but like them talking about Moses and his brother Aaron, and Aaron had to speak and blah, blah, blah. And it makes you start to, you've got a special baby born in an island of mystery. So like, ooh, what is this baby?
And you're about
to
pair up the religious quiet man with the chatty heroin addict.
But
the chatty former altar boy heroin addict.
Yeah. So thinking about Aaron, the significance of that name and like what this baby might do in the future, maybe, you know, et cetera. So that is Accent Corner. It has to do with, the name Aaron. Can I read out also the Leslie Arce Memorial Ironic?
Please do.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we should say really quickly, 23rd Psalm starts, "The Lord is my shepherd." So speaking of shepherds, here comes Jack. Jack, talking to Mike, says, "No one's forgotten about Walt."
Everyone's forgotten about Walt.
Everyone's forgotten about Walt.
So many people have forgotten about Walt.
Everyone's like, fuck yeah, Sawyer's back. Did you guys see? Sawyer's back.
Love you, Sawyer.
And Jin and Son are fucking, like, obviously Sawyer. Fucking.
Like, really fucking. Like, when did he have time to catch that fish? They've been, like, fucking
yeah,
so much.
Stuff's new.
Yeah. You know who forgot about Walt? Son, the moment Jin took his shirt off. Like, Walt fucking.
I have one more question while we're talking about this family that's been torn asunder. Who's in charge of Vincent now?
Where is Vincent?
I have an answer, but it's a spoiler.
Okay. Well, good to know that before we transition into spoilers, actually, we're going to do that thing we promised. We're going to rank the seasons of Lost, but we're not going to say why. We're going to explain that later on in the storm, and this is...
Well, I think we should say why we're ranking them. We're not going to go any deeper than our ranking.
Correct. And I don't think we could say, like, the blank season, even though I think that
might
help some of us. But if you want more details, maybe in the storm, but here we're going to do it in the calm. This is going to be a reoccurring feature when we feel like it. But this is the first time we're going to rank the entirety of Lost. How do we want to do this, guys? Do we want to take turns? Do you want to go? But let's take turns, because otherwise it's going to be all of us listing numbers in a round robin, and it's dumb. Joanna, let's start with you. From worst to best, numbered seasons of the television show.
Okay. List. I debated whether we should put this in the calm. Ultimately, I wanted us to put this in the calm, but I want to let you guys know that my answer to the worst season of Lost is the one you're currently watching, which is number 2. And I don't want to, like, if you're new to Lost... I don't want to use that to put you off. I just want to, like, maybe it's encouraging. Because if you're like, oh, I'm kind of enjoying it. Oh, this is as bad as you think it gets? Cool, I can go from here. But it's just, like, it's a long season. And it feels like, you know, they go from the high of season 1 where they, like, okay, we're going to... This is literally the only season I'm going to talk about at all. And then I'll just read numbers. But it's like, it's a long season. Some of the later seasons are shorter. And they like, season 1 was so bang up successful. And they're like, let's just do it again with a few more added characters, maybe in season 2. And then I think they realize, and they've said this before, that they were like, ooh, no, we need to figure out some other stuff to do because we can't just do this forever. So then it just gets better from there. So. Season 2, worst. Season 4, second worst. Season 6, right there in the middle. Season 3, right there in the middle. Season 3 ends especially strong. Season 1, second from the top. And number 1 for me is season 5. And I should say that this ranking was inspired by a Reddit AMA that friend of the pod, Emily Vandervoet, gave, where she gave a fairly... I've swapped, like, couple things, but... I think my first and my last place are the same as hers. So credit where it's due. All right. Neil, you want to go?
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So we did this sort of on the spot. And this is, I think I should clarify, the longest rewatch I have is only through like halfway of season 3. So this is probably wrong, but this was just from memory. I actually had season 5 on the bottom, which I'm now... super questioning. But mine went season 5 on the bottom, season 2 in the fifth spot, season 6 right there in the middle, season 4 was at number 3, season 3 was at number 2, and I have season 1 at number 1. But I have a feeling there's a lot of recency bias there. We'll see.
I agree that 1 and 3 deserve like to be towards the top of the ranking.
And season 5 is the one I feel like I remember the least about, which is probably why it ended up on the bottom. So that one feels very subject to change. I probably will end up agreeing with you on the whole season 2 thing, even though I really like season 2.
Yay! I also really like season two, but it is towards the bottom of my list. Here we go. At the very bottom, season six, because like I said, if we could split seasons into halves, this list would be entirely different for me. Then you got season four, a little short. Then you got season two, for all the reasons that Joanna talked about. Then you got three, again, if you could split it in half, season three would be in a completely different spot. Then you got season five, and then at the very top, season one, where everything is promised and nothing needs to be answered, and everything can just be tossed into the future, where it'll eventually be a complete whole, and we don't have to worry about it. I also haven't rewatched the series in its entirety for a few years, but you can tell that mine might have a little bit something to do about when we get answers and whether or not those answers are satisfying. Which I think is how my ranking fell into place.
No, but I like that we all agree on one and three, and then it's possible that Neil might change his mind about season five. He might not, but we might wind up all having five, one, and three in the top, like in the top spots. We might, maybe, or maybe Neil will just be like, "No, this season sucks."
what was Emily's list?
I don't have it in front of me right now,
but
it definitely had five at the top. I think it went 5-3-1.
Mm-hmm.
And then 4-6-2.
Okay. I'm just like, curious.
Starting at the top going, yeah. So I just swapped 3-1 and 6-4. But my top and my bottom are the same as hers. So.
Yeah. Next week, without any warning, we're going to rank all the episodes of Lost.
I was still in season five. I'm still in, like, so I rewatched everything before we started, and then I was rewatching it with our producer Diana, and we are still in season five, but I had so much fun watching season five with her. And I just, like, I was like, oh my God. And then this episode, and then this episode. So, yeah, I'm really excited for us all to get there in 2022 or whatever. Is it time?
It's time to transition the storm right after this.
So before we get into our very spoilery storm section of this podcast, we'd like to pause and thank our Patreon subscribers at the $10 level or above. They get to hang out and do like movie club with us. They also get a shout out on the podcast if they like. We've actually had some people who opted out because they just like didn't want to have their names read. So that is an option. And the reason I'm mentioning is this is like you can basically have anything you want read out on the air. Don't test that theory too strongly, but like if you contact our producer Diana when you sign up. So that will explain the top two, the brand new members of our Patreon here. The first one, Dealton Dane, the new Sword of the Morning. And then
nice.
Number two is I Should Check Out Some Miyazaki Sometime. And okay. Then we roll over into Claire D, Sarah Halliday, Javier Ernesto Fuentes, Kristen Plante, Mark Marquez, Katie Rich, Ben Goretzky, Amanda Rhodes, Miranda Blankenship, Bailey Carlin, Kyle Davis, Sean Nee, Matt Thompson, Davia Giannini, Carrie Welby Solomon, Zoe Fuchs, Florence, and Rick Russell. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to thank Renee, Nathan Mellahan, Jennifer, Justin, Time Traveler Creative, Mark Schrod, Rosemary, Christina Rudy, TLS, Robin, Benjamin Krikebomber, Shauna Evans, Sandra, almost just.
It's always the easy ones.
Always the easiest ones. Ben Miller, I got that. Ben Miller, Casey Sean Brune, so pretty. Jacob Sistrunk, Amber Plotch, Jennifer Holloway, Daniel Keeling, and SM.
And I have a list of folks that I would like to thank, including Eric Stratton, Christopher Schnaes, Rana, Raquel Azevedo McKinney, Jessica Kapaki. That's what I'm going with. Lisa Beauregard, Kyle Clark, Sydney, Aaron, Kate Whitney, Cassandra Zabo, Corinne, Miranda Lane, Abby Bateman, Victoria Yoder, Carolyn, Rajiv Dasani, Lori Bonar, Pekka Koskimaki. That's all right. Shannon Black, thank you all very much.
can I address, before we get into Locke and Agnes check in, which I have a lot of thoughts about, can I need to address.
Okay.
Number one, who do I think Vincent is with? He's with Rose and Bernard, and there he shall stay for the rest of the series.
Fair.
He doesn't get watched by Libby at any point. I feel like there was a Libby thing.
I feel like Libby walks him or whatever. It's like the dog is cursed. Don't walk that dog.
You're going to get shot.
The plane moment is in season 5. And the reason I love season 5 is it's so timey-wimey. It's a lot of time hoppy shit, which is why Dave probably has it so high. You get like the Dharma,
and why Neil doesn't remember it very well.
Dharma in the 70s. You get LaFleur, one of my favorite episodes of Lost of all time.
That is true. That's the episode we watched while we were in Denver, and it's incredible.
It's so good. Yeah. And then we get but like Locke is walking around trying to figure out when they are in time, and then you see that plane crash. You see it going down, and you're like, oh my god, it's the plane. Mm-hmm. So cool. Yummy, no. So yeah. And then like we should talk about this storm cloud a bit. So okay. Another thing that I think came from the podcast, I don't think you read, I'm 99% sure you didn't read any overlap of this part, Dave, but Carlton said some images in that cloud where you see faces, you see some images from Echo's life that you've not yet seen on the series, just to sort of tantalize the audience about some of the other stories. There's a picture of a young woman with a headdress. Damon says there's a couple, an older couple. These are all ideas we have for the future, and hopefully people will be able to go back and look at this episode and go, Carlton Key says, we knew what we were doing. And so, like, of course, the big bummer of how great this episode is and how much we like this actor and all this sort of stuff like that is that, you know, Mr. Echo leaves pretty quickly. And that was the actor's choice. He did not want to be on the show anymore. So, you can't really fault him for that, but like, that's an added layer of frustration watching this episode, because you're like, all the cool places they could have gone with Mr. Echo and Echo and Locke and like all that sort of stuff like that. And this idea of all the plans that they had for him. And so, and another follow-up from that is that you get this moment where he like stares down the smoke cloud and he's like, I'm not afraid of him, like sort of thing, right? And then later he like dies. From the exact same thing. And so you have to try to figure out narratively in your head, like what's the difference between the two moments? What, you know, what was Smokey doing here that he wasn't doing later? How had Echo changed from then to now? Like what, you know, and the truth is they had to scramble, but like it makes the Smokey reading him scene in this episode feel, I don't know, a little funky, right?
Well, it does also feel, you know, what we know about the, is this a, I guess I should ask if this is a Man in Black as the smoke monster moment. Because then it's like maybe Echo's on a list, like maybe he's one of the candidates. At this point, you know, like at this point, if they're even remotely getting this far, but also maybe the smoke monster didn't want to interrupt the mission of conviction that he was clearly on to find his brother. You know, like the smoke monster reads him. I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to like logic it out.
I mean,
the smoke monster reads him is like, oh, well, I guess I got to let him go find Yemi before I can kill
yeah,
him.
Yeah. I mean, if the smoke monster is Man in Black and he is reading him, then like you could look at it as like at this point, like the smoke monster sees Yemi in his memory and he's like, oh, he's about to go to the plane. That's really going to fuck him up. Ooh, and Charlie's here and he's going back to the heroin plane. That's really going to fuck him up. Like, let's let him go. Let's let him see what happens. And then later on, they just end up like building a church, and that's not anything you want. So maybe it's time to thrash him about. But it is one of the many times that production and season 2 have lost, or one of the two times, I guess, because Ana Lucia kind of has to be shuttled off to for behind the scenes things. Yeah, I like this. I like the idea of the monster scanning people and emotionally judging people. And I like the sort of step in the direction towards sentience away from, security system. But I do think this episode is like really good on character answers, but really vague on island answers. Like I was saying, like, I don't know. This episode seems like a bunch of coincidences colliding, and it's supposed to, but I don't know how that plays into, like, did Yemi get drawn to the island by Jacob to draw Echo to the island? Was like, are they all some sort of going through some sort of test? Like, I don't know. At least we know that.
Yeah, or was it just like a sheer fluke thing that the island was there when Yemi's plane went down?
Right.
You know, or was Yemi, do we ever get an explanation of what takes down Yemi's plane? Like why they crashed?
Why did Oceanic A-15 crash?
Because Desmond didn't push the button.
Well, we get an explanation on that one. Oh. Is it the same explanation?
Low on fuel.
we'll have to watch for it because I don't remember it exactly.
Decided to go from Nigeria to, like, directly to America.
Papua New Guinea or wherever there.
Well, and that's the thing, like, you know, when later we realize that the island is not in one spot.
Oh, right.
All the time.
Because that's not towards,
you know,
the
so it's like the island could have been off the coast of Nigeria. That's how it came. That's my assumption, at least, is that's how Yemi's plane ended up on the island in the South Pacific. Is because the island can move.
Yeah, and like swallowed them up in some sort of devil's triangle.
Sure.
I like it. So
Echo is a candidate. His candidate number is 76.
Oh, nice.
Okay. So that makes
sense. Yeah, can't, like, kill him yet.
Also, something I love, you know, like, he didn't want to be on the show anymore.
Right.
That in the end, when they're, like, bringing everyone back, right, they can't bring him back because he's like, fuck you, I'm not going back to Hawaii. So, I love how they have, like, invisible Mr. Echo playing chess with Hurley. It's like, he's here. You just can't see him, but he's here. Oh my god. Yeah, and then, like, well, let's save the conversation about Yemi until
he shows up.
His other episode. But I just think it's funny, mm-hmm. we just had this whole conversation about Kate's horse and then, like, a Yemi episode right after. So this really feels like the time when they were just sort of, like, throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall without, like, not willy-nilly, obviously. They're planting seed in the smoke cloud that they don't get to, like, pay off and stuff like that, but, like, the Yemi and the Kate Horse stuff just feels like they were like, ooh, jungle mystery. Pile another mystery on top of this jungle. And later they were, I think, a bit more judicious with who is dead, when and where, et cetera.
So. Mm-hmm. I like season two because it feels like it has a bunch of really important mythology, but really it's also where all the stuff that ends up tripping them up later, like, begins. Because it is that excitement you were talking about in the column where it's like, we got season two. We're a huge show. Oh my god, there are so many episodes in a season of television. And then they have to, you know, they start season three sort of in this rut they dug themselves by answering questions in a weird way. And it takes them like five or six episodes to get out of it. And then they do, and they bounce back. And maybe, I guess, before we do lock check-in, does anybody have some more spoilery thoughts on their season rankings? If you could split season three up, season 3B stays way high. Season 3A goes way down to the bottom.
Yeah.
Season 3B is like, oh, so it leaps over season 1 for me. It's so strong. Yeah, I think season 5, I like the flash sideways stuff. That's why 6 is like right in the middle for me, because like I understand why it's frustrating for people, but I just kind of like it. But, like, I don't think all of the Desmond stuff around it necessarily works. Honestly, I think it was a way to keep Henry Ian Cusick, who was such a fan favorite, like, in the show, as much as possible. But I just love all the ways in which they're, like, connected in this other universe. I find it very charming. And, like, this all, like, it's like a big, long episode of What If. Like, it's great. I really like it.
I like that, but everything on the island is 80% bullshit.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And then season 4, why do we hate season 4 again?
It's just short and kind of pointless. I mean, the only reason I put it below 2...
I don't hate season 4.
Season 4 is like freighter stuff,
yeah,
right?
Kearney's running around causing Kimi.
Yeah.
Kearney's Kimi. The Simpsons character.
I liked Kimi.
Kimi's running... I mean, it's fine.
I love
But
Kimi.
he's like a straight villain in a quick little... It's like the 24 season of Lost.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Well, and it is...
He is he's the only villain that you're like, well, this dude just...
Yeah, when is this guy gonna die? Like, we don't like him.
Yeah.
And, like, we thought we disliked Ben, but now we definitely don't like this guy.
I mean, I guess that's the work that season four does, is it, like, puts Ben in a much more complicated gray area for us. Alex dies, etc., you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you got Faraday starting to try to figure out the island and...
Faraday, why are you so the best?
Getting caught up in the chase. So this...
It also has the constant.
The constant.
That's three.
Yeah.
Four?
That's season four.
That's
season four, episode five.
Oh, yeah, except on the freighter.
Yeah.
Timey-wimey. Prelude to timey-wimey things. So Locke, this episode, seems to have Michael's number. Here's the real question, or the real reason that Locke and Michael can't talk about the computer maybe connecting to another station, because Locke would have been so into that mystery, he would not have left Michael alone. That would have been Locke's mystery.
Locke would have been like, why did Michael ask me that question?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, now I can't sleep. Fuck. I'm going to have to goop myself in order to get to sleep now.
Yeah, he's like, it was like a week ago, you were standing next to me watching the part of the film where they said, don't try to contact it. And then Michael walks off, doesn't hear the causing a second part of the incident thing. And the next week he's going to be like, so do you think we could use the computer? If he mentioned that to Locke, like a little bit, Locke would have a new obsession and would...
Locke is hiding around the corner every time Michael's
in the hatch. He would goop Michael the next day just to get to the bottom of it.
I do think it does make a stronger case for it being like Walt using like electronic telepathy that he starts chatting exactly when Michael sits down and not when any of the other like 20 people who are doing rotations sit down, because if it was like a random person, how would they know that it's Michael? Because isn't it when Michael sits down in this episode, the first thing he sees on screen is like dad question mark?
Oh, like, he tries to type and then eventually it comes up.
Oh, he tries
to
type.
But I think it's also, don't they have cameras on it?
Do they have cameras
on it? In the Swan still?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe.
So I think that someone could see him, but you're absolutely right, Neil. What else could it be aside Walt living in the computer? Everything else would be weird.
Right. We haven't found the Swan yet, have we?
No, it's Electro Walt. this one seems...
Maybe it's Walt using his telepathy to possess Mikhail.
He's living inside the eye patch.
Yeah.
This episode seems more Mikhail because it is, you know, leaning towards the getting to go out and the thing. But I don't think that...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that...
He's like, they're coming back. Like, it's... Why would they let... Why would Walt be near a computer he could use without their supervision?
Well, I don't think necessarily...
Right.
Just because the first one was Walt doesn't mean this one has to be Walt.
Okay. So the first one...
Oh, like Walt got caught?
Or it's magical Electro Walt.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's Mikhail. Mm-hmm.
And Mikhail's like watching the computer and he's like, is he talking to somebody? And then he realized.
I think what's actually true is that you're acknowledging that I was right and you were wrong, but you just can't get there.
The beauty of Lost is they're not going to answer this question. So until one of us gives in.
You can't concede that this deplorable. That's the right answer.
I really like the idea of Walt's powers having something to do with electromagnetism. So
I'm not talking
myself into him electrically using the computer on a early episode of this podcast is just like a delicious idea that I don't want to give up on yet.
I'm not opposed to Walt having electromagnetic powers. I am opposed to him being inside the computer, tronning his way into our hearts. I have a fun fact that we can't say in the comic.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, other than the fact that they like wanted Echo to be around till the end and they tried to get him back for season six, all sort of stuff. We never learned Mr. Echo's last name. And there's only one other character on Lost where we never learned their last name. Do you know who that is?
Rose and Bernard?
No.
No? I'm trying to think of, like, whose last name do I not
Jacob.
know?
Jacob.
I think Jacob's last name.
They actually might even
Jacob Island.
Well, but they might the mother. Island. Isn't there an episode where it's all about Jacob and
yeah,
it's probably Alice in there. And Janie. Like the Jacob, mother has a name or something.
Jacob Horse.
Yeah, Jacob Horse. What's Jacob name? Star Wars.
Jacob. Jacob Palpatine. Yeah,
absolutely. I don't know. Richard. No, Richard Alpert. God damn it, Dave. That's like the dumbest guess. It's like guessing Ben Linus in one word. Okay, never mind. Go ahead.
Is it Kimi?
But he's also like Ricardus, you know what I mean? It's not Kimi, because I think Kimi is Martin Kimi. Kimi's his last name. I'll give you another hint. This name is usually said in conjunction with another character's first name. They're a set, and we talk about them a lot, but not in a good way. Like, whatever, what's the opposite of Rose and Bernard?
Oh, like the spider people?
Yeah, the spider people.
Nikki and Paolo?
Oh, Nikki and Paolo.
We never learned Paolo's last name. So, something Brazilian, but.
Star Wars.
So.
I'm sure it's. Paolo Palpatine. Sure it's something sex.
Paolo Palpatine.
Paolo Spiders.
Paolo Spiders.
The spider people.
What? It makes sense. You knew exactly who I was talking about.
I knew exactly what you meant. Yeah, I did. All right. So, we did it? Did we do it?
I think we did it. Neil, where are we going next week? On the island.
Well, it's been a while since we've had a Jack episode. Actually, we haven't had a Jack episode since episode one of this season. This one's called The Hunting Party. So we'll see what happens.
Ooh,
there.
Back to Jack, finally. I bet he is feeling jealous or something. We'll find out.
I bet he's forgotten about Walt by
next
week.
Yeah, he's definitely forgotten about Walt. Guys, until next time, where can people find more of your work around the internet? Let's start this week with Neil Miller.
You can always get me over at filmschoolrejects.com, on Twitter at rejects, and also at One Perfect Shot. That's what I do most of the time. Don't forget to follow the show at Storm Podcast. That's where all the stuff is.
And Joanna Robinson.
I forgot. I was just sort of reading the synopsis of next week. Okay. You can find me at Inside Mikhail's eye patch. you can find me at VanityFair.com. It is award season, so you want to tune into Little Gold Men, where I'm doing a lot of award season podcasty stuff. And we're almost done with the My So-Called Life podcast, The Boiler Room. This week, we had the great Vanessa Bayer of Saturday Night Live fame, who like emailed Ooh. Us to ask us if she could come on our podcast. And we said yes. So we talked to Vanessa Bayer about the time she met Jared Leto, and it's pretty great. And so, yeah, that's the Boiler Room cast, where we only have literally two more episodes left and then we're done. That's it. So
wow.
So,
well, there wasn't a lot of My So-Called Life. So.
There wasn't.
It's a good complete work, though. Big fan of complete works. I'm Dave Gonzalez. You could find me on Twitter at DA70. You could find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where this week, two of my co-hosts were in Sundance. So me and Katie Rich just decided to hang out and talk about two movies, The Bling Ring and Stripes. Stripes is bad. Find out why. Fighting in the War Room podcast. And let me remind you that you are constantly fighting the good fight against gravity that is trying to pull you down to death. Don't help it and fall down. Stay upright. We'll see you next week.